Blog Talk Radio.
Tuning in to this 309th live radio broadcast. As you know, we broadcast to many areas around the country. My name is Chuck Albright, and along with our other hosts, we hope you will share in the conversation tonight. Oh, by the way, this is Open Mic Monday. That means you're welcome to bring in any topic you want on a kitchen table, as Neil liked to refer to our show. Just as a reminder on how to sign into the show, and call in if you have comments or you want to join the host. Here's all you need to do. Go to www.kalradioshow.com and look for the radio icon on the home page. Click the arrow in the circle at 7 p.m. and you can listen on your computer. You can also tune in by going to www.blogtalkradio.com/Captain Eddie. This site is the site of our provider, Blog Talk Radio. Now, here's an easier way. Just call 213-816-1611 at 7 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, and you can listen right in on your phone. You can also join in the conversation by just saying, "Hi, since you're already on the phone, we want to hear from you." Now, let's get this episode 309 in the air. Neil, how about starting that R2800 engine and letting this Martin 404 in the air?
Makes getting there
so easy to do. Easter's got the right time and the right place for you. Easter's got...
Tonight, we'd like to take you from...
It's time, America. Time for Walter Winchell. Presented to you by Gruen, the precision watch. Gruen, the finest watch you can wear. Gruen, the finest watch you can give. Brings you the man who gives America the news. Walter Winchell of the New York Daily Mirror and the Washington Post.
Mr. and Mrs. North and South American, all the ships at sea, let's go to press. Dallas, Texas. The Texas special of the Katy line has been wrecked near Roy City, Texas, between San Antone and St. Lou. Several reported killed. Just happened. We may have more on it later. San Juan, Puerto Rico. The Nationalist Party of Puerto Rico is on the march. They are plotting violence and maybe a revolution after raiding armories for their guns. New York City. The police in New York have a new hot lead on the murder of a Bronx mobster. He was killed last week for welching on commissions due to a dope ring in East Harlem. New York City. Mayor-elect Wagner will name his police commissioner this week, maybe Wednesday. The field is now down to six, including Assistant District Attorney Vincent O'Connor and, surprise, Chief Inspector Rothengast, two good men.
Before you go on, Chuck, and tell us about the Morse code, we thought it would be interesting to refresh our memories of long, 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 long time ago when we heard voices like Walter Winchell and the way the news was delivered. It was delivered years ago by Morse code, as well as so many things that were communicated by air, ship, and railroads using the Morse code. So we're going to tell you a little bit about the history of the Morse code and graduate our show into the modern-day communication, which is the modern-day the computer internet. Jargon or abbreviations or whatever they call them, and we'll touch on that toward the end of our show. Chuck, how about getting us started here?
Okay, and from Samuel Morse code to the present day, LOL, that stands for laugh out loud. People have found ways to communicate in language of shortcuts. We can go back to the days of hieroglyphics on the cave walls and the ancient Egyptian writings. We can direct tonight's program to language in our own lifetime. Let's start with Morse code, which early aviators had to know to communicate and navigate. 1836, Samuel Morse demonstrated the ability of the telegraph system to transmit information over wires. The information was sent as a series of electrical signals, short signals referred to as this and represented as dots. Long signals were referred to as dash are represented as dashes.
Well, I don't have the sound of the V as in victory or V in the Morse code, but we all remember.
We'll continue on.
And the three dots are, as they're referred to, dits, and the one long dash, which is a da. Dit, 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 da. Was the sound of V, and it was communicated during the war. And Chuck, how about some more information?
The early days of flight proved quite difficult for air-to-ground communication. Ground crews would rely on colored paddles or hand signals or other visual aids. This was effective for ground crews, but it offered no way for pilots to communicate back. In the beginning of World War I, planes were not outfitted with radios. So soldiers used to have large panels cut out to distinguish friendly foes, forces. These cutouts would also be used as directional devices to help pilots navigate back to friendly airfields. As technology developed, planes were able to use telegraph systems to send messages in Morse code. Telegraph used a plunger to complete the electrical circuit. When the circuit was completed, it sent out a signal as a dot or a dash. By depressing the plunger devised in a rhythmic pattern, a telegraph operator could spell out words, with each dot or dash sequence representing a corresponding letter in a word. Using this technology, planes were able to call in accurate artillery fire and act as forward observers. Dorothy?
In 1912, the Royal Flying Corps had begun experimenting with wireless telegraphy in aircraft. Lieutenant B.T. James was a leading pioneer of wireless radio in aircraft. In the spring of 1913, he had begun to experiment with the radios in a BE-2A. James brought the science of wireless in an aircraft to a high state of efficiency before he was shot down and killed by anti-aircraft fire on July 13, 1915. In April 1915, Captain J.M. Furnival was the first person to hear a voice from the ground when Major Prince said, "If you hear me now, it will be the first time speech has ever been communicated to an aeroplane in flight." In June 1915, the world's first air-to-ground voice transmission took place at Brooklands in England. Over about 20 miles, ground-to-air was initially by Morse, but it is believed two-way voice communications was being achieved by July 1915. In early 1916, the Marconi Company in England started production of an air-to-ground radio transmitters receivers, which were used in the war over France. John?
In 1917, AT&T invented the first American air-to-ground radio transmitter. They tested this device at Langley Field in Virginia and found it was a variable technology. In May 1917, General George Squire of the U.S. Army Signal Corps contracted AT&T to develop an in-to-air, air-to-ground radio with a range of 2,000 yards. By July 4th of the same year, AT&T technicians achieved two-way communication between pilots and ground personnel. This allowed ground personnel to communicate directly with pilots using their voice instead of Morse code. A few of the devices saw service in the war. They also provided this was available and variable technology worthy of refinement and advancement. Therefore, future models had this technology installed in biplanes on airstrips in France in 1919.
Now let's talk about the International Distress Signal. SOS is the International Morse Code Distress Signal. This distress signal was first adopted by the German government and radio regulation effective April 1, 1905, and became a worldwide standard under the Second International Radio Telegraphic Convention, which was signed on November the 3rd, 1906, and became effective July 1, 1908. SOS remained the maritime radio distress signal until 1999, when it was replaced by the Global Maritime Distress and Safety System. SOS is still recognized as a visual distress signal. The SOS distress signal is a continuous sequence of three dots and three dashes. Three dates all ran together without letter spacing. In International Morse code, three dots form the letter S. Three dots make the letter O, so SOS became an easy way to remember the order of dots and dots. In modern terminology, SOS is a Morse pretty call signal or pro signal. The formal way to write it is with a bar above the letters SOS. In popular usage, SOS became associated with such phrases as save our ship or save our soul. SOS is the only one of several ways that the combination could have been written. VTB, for example, would produce exactly the same sound, but SOS was chosen to describe this combination. SOS is the only nine-element signal in the Morse code, making it more easily recognizable, as no other symbol uses more than eight elements. Neil?
The following are a few historical SOS calls. You hear the signal as it's generated over the telegraph. SOS. The ones that want to list here, there are many, I'm sure, that were used, but these are the most famous ones that sent out this SOS distress call. The steamship Kentucky that sank in 1910, and it was a very early use of SOS, which saved all 46 people aboard. And, of course, we all remember RMS Titanic, which used CQD as well, but this was sent out in a SOS call. That ship sank in 1912. The RMS Lusitania, which was torpedoed in 1915, also sent out the SOS signal. The HMHS Britannic sank in 1916. And the SS Andrea Doria sank in 1956. In aviation, instead of SOS, pilots use the word Mayday. The Mayday procedure word was originated in 1923 by Frederick Stanley Mockford. He was a senior radio officer at Croydon Airport in London. Mockford was asked to think of a word that would indicate distress and would easily be understood by all pilots and ground staff in case of an emergency. Since much of the traffic at the time was between Croydon and a airport, Le Bourget Airport in Paris, he proposed the word Mayday from the French word "fin et midi," meaning "come and help me."
Before the voice call Mayday, SOS was the Morse code equivalent of the Mayday call. In 1927, the International Radio Telegraph Convention of Washington accepted the voice call Mayday as a radio telephone distress call in place of the SOS radio telegraph, Morse code. A maritime example. In the actual Mayday call made by MV Summit Venture, when it collided with the Skyway Bridge in 1980, collapsing the bridge, making a false distress call in the United States is a federal crime, carrying sanctions and up to 6 years imprisonment and/or a fine of $250,000 and restitution to the Coast Guard. If a Mayday call cannot be sent because a radio is not available, a variety of distress signals and calls for help can be used. Additionally, a Mayday call can be sent on behalf of one vessel to another by using a conventional call, a Mayday relay. Civilian aircraft making Mayday call in the United States airspace are encouraged to use the following format, omitting any portions of necessary expediency or where they are irrelevant. Mayday, 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 the name of the station addressed, aircraft call sign and type, nature of emergency, weather, pilot's intentions, and or request, present position and heading, or a loss, or lost, then last known. Altitude or flight level, fuel remaining in minutes, number of souls on board, and any other useful information. The Mayday procedure word was originated in 1923 by Frederick Stanley Mockford, 1897 to 1962. A senior radio officer at Croydon Airport in London, Mockford was asked to think of a word that would indicate distress and would easily be understood by all pilots and ground staff in an emergency. Since much of the traffic at the time was between Croydon and La Bonnette, pronounced Le Bourget, airport in Paris, he proposed the word Mayday from the French word Mayday, a shortened version of the Vents de Amar. Boy, my French is horrible. Pronounced Pene de Mar, meaning come and help me. Ooh.
Well, that is a little about the Morse code and how it's used in the modern-day times as far as a distress signal. It's also used on all navigational charts to identify the navigation piece of equipment, whether it's a VOR or a non-directional beacon. The pilot is able to identify and clearly identify that fix that is printed on the navigational chart. So when we used to, in the old days, I'm sure now they're using GPS, relying on it heavily to navigate. We tuned in the VOR, for instance, Atlanta VOR, which was a very high-frequency radio navigational aid for pilots, and airways were drawn from one VOR to another. And we always had to tune it in and identify that, yes, we have identified Atlanta, because there are other VORs close by, and the pilot may have misdialed in that navigational facility. So it was always the best procedure to tune it in, identify it, and then, of course, set your instruments, your navigational instruments, to that VOR or non-directional beacon or whatever you are using. So this was standard procedure. So the Morse code is used still today in navigating, because the pilot has that identifier. They can tune it in, listen to it, and make sure. Now, back in the old days, when we didn't have VOR, we had low-frequency ranges, and the pilot had to identify an on-course signal by listening to two letters that were transmitted in Morse code, the letter A, which was a dit-da, dit-da, and the letter N, which was a da-dit, da-dit. So a dot-dash was the letter A, and the N was a dash-dot. Now, when you were on course, those two letters merged together to form a hum, an on-course hum, that the pilot could know that the airplane was on course going away from the airport or coming to the airport to land the airplane. If the pilot ventured off to the left or to the right, then depending upon which side the airplane drifted or got off course, they would then once again hear an A or an N signal. So that meant that they had drifted off the beam or the hum, and they were off course. So this was the early way of using Morse code, just two letters. And to know that you passed over the station, they had a light that transmitted right over the station, that you were now over the station, and then you were going away from it. And the pilot also listened on their headsets, that if the hum was building, increasing in volume, they were getting closer to the station. Once they passed over the station, then, of course, the hum started to fade, meaning they were going away from the station. So in the old days, it was quite tricky. Not only did you have to tune in and listen, but you also had to navigate your airplane to fly on the course. So we have to give those early aviators a lot of credit in flying airplanes. And sometimes these guys fought with emergencies. They had emergency engine failures. They also had weather to contend with, and weather was always doing things to the radio frequencies, and a lot of static buildup in the headset that the pilot would have to distinguish between the static noise and the Morse code identifier. So that's what I wanted to discuss before we got on to another topic and we go into modern-day communications. Dorothy, how about talking a little bit about the modern computer communications that is so prevalent
today?
Yes,
we have a lot of them. We have a lot of them. Thank you, Neil. The list of email abbreviations that are commonly used to get your point across in less time and fewer strokes. It's 2G4U, too good for you. AWHFY, are we having fun yet? AYPI, and your point is BFF, best friends forever. GAL, get a life. GMTA, great minds think alike. J4F, just for fun. KISS, keep it simple, stupid. LOL, laugh out loud. QL, quit laughing. Are you okay? That means are you okay, just like it sounds. SITD, still in the dock? TIC, tongue in cheek. WYSI, WYG, WYSIWYG is the way we used to call it. What you see is what you get. YYSSW, yay, yay, sure, sure, whatever. ZZZ, sleeping, bored, tired. These may be the longest ones. AWG, THT, GTTA. Are we going to have to go through that again? STWI, WTGO, stop, the world I want to get off. We're sure to have your favorites if you use the computer to carry on social communications. Well, enough about social media and internet communications. There are also visual ways to give distress signals. How about it, Chuck?
Well, before Chuck gets in with the breaking news about the busiest airports, I want to let you know that back in 1990 or 89 or 90, when I first got my first computer, and I'm sure you guys remember when you first bought your computer, and it was expensive back in those days, but I had a friend of mine up in Connecticut, and we were hired in the same class, and we liked to chat using the Internet, and I think I was using CompuServe back in the day as my provider. I also used what was the name of that one? Started with a P. I'm not. Prodigy.
Oh, yes.
It was an
right.
early one.
Right.
And we would carry on a conversation that sometimes we were worried about our wives looking over our shoulder. So we started right off the bat by using these shortcuts to things that we wanted to say and didn't want to commit it to a full letter or a word. So back in early 1900s, I was using it. Do any of you remember when you first started to communicate using these shortcuts? Anyone? We've got our board, by the way, lit up. So I'm going to open all the microphones, all the telephones. So if anyone wants to jump in, please do so.
I don't know about the rest of the people, but I do online free poker, and that's what they use is a bunch of shortcuts because the game goes so fast. You could not possibly write out anything in the time allotted before your cards come up again. So that's how I learned them.
That's one thing I never learned, so I can't really say. I used to just have to type what I got from any boss around, so that was my day.
Well, I think LOL And by the way, if you want to listen to what LOL sounds like in Morse code, this is what LOL would sound like using Morse code. Now, if you don't believe it, look it up. But that's our little story about any other comments, because we do have our board full, and from Atlanta to all over the place. So, okay, Chuck, I think you have got some breaking news about the busiest airports in the world, or is that Don?
Actually, I think we assign that to Don if he's still on.
I'm here.
Yeah.
Well, you got number 9 there on breaking news.
Yeah, I know. Down to breaking news, the top 10 busiest airports in the world. CNN, more than 400 million passengers flew through Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport in 2016, making it the busiest passenger airport in the world for the 19th year in a row, according to Airport Council International's preliminary passengers for data 2016. Atlanta, which is a major port of entry into North America and connecting hub for as many as the U.S. domestic flights, saw an increase in passengers of 2.6% last year compared to 2015, according to ACI. Atlanta is also within a two-hour flight, 80% of the state population. The passenger numbers, which include domestic and international travel, will be included in ACI's overall preliminary report, will be released in April. Final report will be published in June. We are thrilled to be named the 19th consecutive year the busiest airport in the world, said Roosevelt Council, Atlanta's general manager. Handling 104 million passengers in a safe, efficient manner speaks volumes about the leadership of Mayor Carson Reed over employees, our employees, and our relationship with other airline partners. Beijing Capital International Airport came in second place again with more than 94 million passengers, 5% increase over 2016. Dubai International Airport in the United Arab Emirates also retained third place. It flew more than 83 million passengers in 2016,
wow,
up more than 7% 2015. Los Angeles International Airport jumped 7th to 4th place, with 8% growth translating to nearly 81 million passengers. China had more good news, with Shanghai's Pudong International Airport entering the top 10 in 9th place, which more than 66 million passengers and a growth rate of 10% over 2015. Became the 13th place in 2015. That pushed Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport with more than 65 million passengers and essential flat growth to 11th place. ACI's preliminary database and data from more than 1,200 airports worldwide.
Just to run down these quickly, Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport, 104 million passengers. Beijing in China, 94 million. Dubai, 83 million. Los Angeles, 80,900,000. Tokyo, 79,520,000. O'Hare, which used to be number one for years and years, is number 6 at 77,960,000. The London Heathrow Airport had 75,700,000. Hong Kong International Airport is number 8 at 70,500,000. Shanghai at 66 million came in ninth, and 10th is Paris Charles de Gaulle Airport with 65,933,000. So those are the ones that were the busiest in the world. And Atlanta seems like, what did you say, Don, had won it for 4 or 5 years now?
Let me just back up. It was
several years, anyhow.
3 years.
No, I think it was nine years.
Yeah, they took over from Chicago, I believe.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah. Now, we've received some email from our members on the website. I'd like to read one that I particularly really enjoyed it, and I think you'll have fun if I can get it out properly. But the radio show website received this email from Bob Leathery, which I thought might be a change of direction and in a fast sort of way. But the article was written by Rick Riley of Sports Illustrated on flying in an F-14 Tomcat. And if you aren't laughing out loud by the time we get to the milk duds, your sense of humor is seriously broken. And this message is for America's most famous athletes. Someday you may be invited to fly in the back seat of one of your country's most powerful fighter jets. Many of you already have. John Elway, John Stockton, Tiger Woods, to name a few. If you get this opportunity, let me urge you, with the greatest sincerity, move to Guam. Change your name. Fake your own death. Whatever you do, do not go. I know. The U.S. Navy invited me to try it. I was thrilled. I was pumped. I was toast. I should have known when they told me my pilot would be Chip Biff, King of Fighter Squadron 213 at Naval Air Station, Oceana in Virginia Beach. Whatever you're thinking a Top Gun named Chip Biff King looks like, triple it. He's about 6 foot, tan, ice blue eyes, wavy surfer hair, finger-crippling handshake, the kind of man who wrestles deceptive alligators in his leisure time. And if you see this man, you better run the other way and fast. Biff King was born to fly. His father, Jack King, was for years the voice of NASA. T-minus 15 seconds and counting. Remember that? Chip would charge neighborhood kids a quarter each time to hear his dad. Jack would wake up from naps surrounded by nine-year-olds waiting for him to say, "We have liftoff." Biff was to me, was to fly me in an F-14D Tomcat, a ridiculously powerful $60 million weapon with nearly as much thrust as weight, not unlike Colin Montgomery. I was worried about getting airsick, so the night before the flight, I asked Biff if there was something I should eat the next morning. "Yeah, bananas," he said. "For the potassium," I asked. "No," Biff said, "because they taste about the same coming up as they do going down." The next morning, out on the tarmac, I had on my flight suit with my name sewn over the left breast. No call sign like crash or sticky or lead foot, but still, it was very cool. I carried my helmet in the crook of my arm, as Biff had instructed. If ever in my life I had a chance to nail Nicole Kidman, this was it. A fighter pilot named Psycho gave me a safety briefing and then fastened me into my ejection seat, which, when employed, would egress me out of the plane at such a velocity that I would be immediately knocked unconscious. Just as I was thinking about aborting the flight, the canopy closed over me, and Biff gave the ground crew a thumbs up, and in minutes, we were firing, nose up at 600 miles per hour. We leveled out, and then canopy rolled over another F-14. Those 20 minutes were the rush of my life. Unfortunately, the ride lasted 80. It was like being on the roller coaster at Six Flags Over Hell, only without rails. We did barrel rolls, snap rolls, loops, yanks, and banks. We dived, rose, and dived again, sometimes with a vertical velocity of about 10,000 feet per minute. We chased another F-14, and it chased us. We broke the speed of sound. Sea was sky, and sky was sea. Flying at 200 feet, we did a 90-degree turn at 550 miles per hour, creating a G-force of 6.5, which is to say I felt as if 6.5 times my body weight was smashing against me, thereby approximating life as Mrs. Colin Montgomery. And I egressed the bananas. And I egressed the pizza from the night before and the lunch before that. I egressed a box of Milk Duds from the sixth grade. I made Linda Blair look polite because of the G's. I was egressing stuff that never thought would be egressed. I went through not one air sick bag, but two. Biff said I passed out twice. I was coated in sweat. At one point, as we were coming in upside down in a bank curve on a mock bombing target and the G's were flattening me like a tortilla and I was in and out of consciousness, I realized I was the first person in history to throw down. I used to know cool. Cool was Elway throwing a touchdown pass or Norman making a five-iron bite. But now I really know cool. Cool is guys like Biff, men with cast-iron stomachs and Freon nerves. I wouldn't go up there again for Derek Jeter's black book. But I'm glad Biff does every day and for less a year than a rookie reliever makes in a home stand. A week later, when the spins finally stopped, Biff called me. He said he and the fighters had the perfect call sign for me. Said he'd send it to me on a patch for my flight suit. What is it? I asked. Two bags. A veteran is someone who at one point in their life wrote a blank check made payable to the United States of America for any amount up to and including their life. And this was the story that we received on the website by Bob Delery. And I also received one from Doris Gillenwaters, who is a friend of mine that lives down in Naples, Florida. And she listened for the first time when we had our episode talking about air safety. And she said, I listened to parts of this episode last night. It left me with memories of what it used to be like to fly and the sheer enjoyment of that experience. Ah, how we gussied up and anticipated a wonderful meal and drinks, several, by the way, served by gracious stewardesses, that we and our luggage would arrive at our destination at the same time, unscathed and fearless. We never questioned the ability of the pilot or the capabilities of the airplane. After all, it was the safest way to go. Ah, things change. And I give our airlines credit for meeting the challenges of the times. And for all the people who helped make flying, for the most part, still a memorable experience. Well, that's all the emails we have. Dorothy, I think you might have one breaking news. I can get the breaking news back again, but would you go ahead while I look through our archives for breaking news again?
I sure will, and our breaking news tonight is the all-female flight crew just made airline history by Nick Levine, Refinery 29 in the UK, March 4th. All-female crew has operated passenger flight around the world for the first time, Air India had said. the airline's all-female crew flew across the Pacific Ocean from New Delhi to San Francisco on Monday. The same crew then flew back to New Delhi across the Atlantic Ocean yesterday, completing their historic circumnavigation of the globe. According to the BBC, the engineers, ground staff, and air traffic controllers who handled the flight were all women, too. Meanwhile, the airline has said it intends to operate other flights with all-female crews in celebration of International Women's Day on the 8th of March. San Francisco Airport has shared some photos of the historic crew, who could be honored in the Guinness World Records books, on Twitter. This historic around-the-world flight, celebrating International Women's Day, is especially welcome coming from Air India, whose gender equality credentials have previously been called into question. In September 2015, the airline was criticized for announcing plans to ground 125 mostly female flight crew for failing to meet the company's body weight standards. Earlier this year, Air India also raised eyebrows by introducing a women-only section on domestic flights in a misguided attempt to combat onboard sexual conduct. I also want to say that I was the first woman officer in an all-men's yacht club back about 10, 15, 20 years ago. And that was a real coup for me because originally when I applied for membership, they had turned me down. And they said, oh, no, no women are allowed as members. And I said, well, one day I will be the first member. And I was the first member of an all-men's yacht club. And then I shortly after became the first director, woman director, of an all-men's yacht club, which, of course, now we had a couple of more women join right after I did. And that was really nice to see that we were finally breaking through. So that's my breaking news for the evening. Back to you, Neil.
Well, interesting, very interesting. I'm sure there have been many all-female flight crews, flight deck crew members, flying on the domestic carriers because there are so many ladies out there now flying commercial airlines, aircraft. Also, lots of military pilots. We have Steve Thompson's daughter who is with the United States Air Force, and she flew fighter jets as well. And what's that old Virginia Slim commercial? What did that What was the tagline of smoking Virginia Slims? You've come a long way.
Come a long way, baby.
Baby. I didn't want to say that word, but thank you, Dorothy.
Remember,
a long way, baby.
Remember National Airlines? My name is Brenda. Fly me.
Oh, yeah. National Airlines. That was National. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they, according to some back in the day, National Airlines hired female flight attendants or stewardesses in those days simply because of their beauty. And do you remember the tagline that National used along with the National Sun on its tail? You remember the sun? Do you remember the tagline as to, like Wings of Man, Eastern, the Wings of Man? National was known as what? Anyone. Oh, come on now. Any of our guests, our listeners, I've got all the microphones on. You'll get a great reward if you answer it. Okay. No one remembers George T. Baker's Airline of the Stars. Chuck, I'm surprised that you missed that one.
I know that was right across the ramp from Eastern.
Hey Chuck, yeah. Remember the round hangar that they had in Miami? They call it
was called a rotunda.
The Maytag washing machine.
Yeah.
named after Bud Maytag.
I had a friend I went to high school with. Her name was Geraldine. And one of the planes, they wrote her name on the airplane. And it, just like you guys said, it wrote on the front of it. We used to call her Jerry. But on the front of the airplane, it said Geraldine. And then the advertisement says, "I'm Geraldine. Come fly with me." And what we had was the, remember the girls would have different raincoats on? And different parts of the flight, they would unzip the raincoat and there'd be another raincoat underneath it. And by the time the flight was over, they were down to hot pants.
Do you remember you remember why they started using that airline of the stars as a tagline? Does anyone remember why? Correct me if I'm wrong, anyone out there, I stand to be corrected, but I believe because National Airline was the first East Coast airline that was awarded by the CAB routes to Los Angeles.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
I think
they flew LA for years before Eastern did. So, and I remember the Lockheed Lodestar being one of the aircraft in their fleet.
That
was a long time ago. I hear a lot of uh-huhs out there. It sounds like to me somebody from Miami is listening in. I do sound very good. 305. But, it's interesting when you go back in history to see the changes, not only in communications, navigation, equipment, but also in flight attendants, stewardesses to flight attendants, and the importance now, instead of a pretty face serving someone, it's now, of course, safety is the main issue. But comedy is now appearing among the airline announcements in the airline announcements. I don't know whether this is good or bad, but a lot of these flight attendants are writing scripts. Some of them you've probably viewed on YouTube, and they are funny. But if I was a frequent flyer, let's say a businessman going from Atlanta to New York all the time and heard the same routine, I think I'd get a little tired of it. But I guess it does bring the passengers' attention to the words that that the flight attendants are saying, mostly in jest, but there is a safety message there. Any comments about the jokes that are now common practice in airline flight crew announcements?
I know they had one where it was a male flight attendant. He had a really funny routine. He had everybody in the airplane laughing. So the company must not object to this kind of behavior.
Southwest does a lot of comedic phrases on their flights.
Seems like they initiated this, Don.
That could have been.
I'd like to.
Before we
do what, Dorothy?
Before we finish with the female pilots, there was a new member that we gained on our website, Libby Haynes, and though she's not an Eastern person, she traveled a lot on the Eastern aircraft. And you folks need to go in and read her little recent About Me that she has on there because she was a pilot, and she describes a little bit of her life on there as learning how, flying when she was 17 years old. So it's a nice piece there. And also you'll find another one of our members put on there, and I think everybody will remember the Falcon newspaper that Eastern has. Well, one of the members there, Manny Camacho, he has a nice picture of the Falcon newspaper from September, October 1988, and in it is a picture of him, and he has a write-up from climbing from agent to Eastern pilot. So you're kind of old to yourself to go in there and look around some of the members. They have some interesting things and photos in there that you may want to see. It's very interesting.
It is, Dorothy, and you're to be complimented again over and over again because you've just done a brilliant job with the website. It's so interesting now, and it was so boring before you came and offered your time.
You had a lot of things that were on there just so weren't highlighted probably because you've got some aircraft in there that are just beautiful to look back and see that when I ever went in there, I always looked at them and read the little blurbs that you have in each one describing them. It's just that people need to go and do that sort of thing in their time, and they owe it to themselves to look up some of the Eastern history that you have in there. There's quite a bit of a write-up under the Eastern history, and, you know, when you go in there, you really feel good that you're part of the Eastern family because there's a lot there that has gone over the years, and unfortunately, I wasn't around this area to know half of the things that you folks have gone through, but it's very interesting for me to read, so I enjoy it immensely.
You know, Dorothy,
and also, I'd like to mention, too, before I put it back to you, Neil, is that anyone out there who has their email address, please make sure that we have your current email address. I've gotten a few of our notifications back with return emails, so I'm sure that a lot of you might have changed providers over the year, and if you have, please let us know. Go in and change your email address, or you can always send it to us at host@ealradioshow.com, so that we'll be sure to get the updated email address. Back to you, Neil.
Okay, Dorothy, you're doing a great job of keeping up to date with the latest aviation news and especially Eastern news, because we get so many people on email sending us about what's happening with Eastern. They all want to know what's happening with Eastern. So anytime we get information about the airline, the new Eastern Airlines group, we're going to put it usually right on the home page, Dorothy. You've
right.
kept us informed right. by giving us breaking news, as we call it. And they're the most recent news headlines from different sources. And we identify some as being rumor that we haven't actually completely verified the facts. Right, Dorothy?
Right, exactly. We try to make sure that whoever has said this is a reliable person and not just talking off their hat as much as you can. So we do the best that we can on that. I've had people write me and ask me about Ed Weigel and if I know where he's at. I, too, have put a little bit about AVI 8 in there under the newsletter 2017 for anybody to go in and kind of look through, and we'll answer their questions about where he is and what he's up to. So we try to keep ahead as much as we can on all of the airline things that everyone loves, and we do the best that we can with it.
Okay, now, before we go off the air, does anyone know what tomorrow is?
Tuesday.
Well, maybe I've got the date wrong.
You thinking about St. Patty's Day on Friday?
Is it on Friday?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Well, I've got a song because we're not on the air Friday. So we're going to play this song, and I'll give someone a gift if they can tell me who the recording artist is of this song. You will receive something nice in the mail. Here we go.
When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morning spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear the angels sing. When Irish hearts are happy, all the world seems bright and gay. And when Irish eyes are smiling, so they steal your heart.
Artist of that song, that the original, who sang just that song that we just played? Who was
Gordon
was the song?
Bing Crosby.
Nope.
Bing Crosby
nope.
sang it. Roger Whittaker sang it.
Roger Whittaker. Who
said
Roger Whittaker?
Carlene.
When you're hearing it.
Carlene, you are the winner.
Yeah.
Who is it? Who is it?
Roger Whittaker.
Oh, boy. Wow.
You've got something coming into the in the mail to you.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Isn't that nice? That was beautiful, Neil.
That was really pretty. Very, very pretty. Yeah. Very
originally,
good
song. I thought it was Bing Crosby, but when he got behind us, it sounded more like Gordon McRae.
Now, Carlene, tell me you didn't put the song up to your Google on your telephone and it told you who the artist is. Please tell me not.
No, I just, because I couldn't do it that quick. I had to do like little shortcuts, but I couldn't remember the code.
I do it
often. I forgot what the code is.
Yeah.
I have to add some commentary about this. I thought that we came up with all these little acronyms because pilots couldn't spell. that's why I thought we started doing codes. Yeah.
That's probably
it's true.
Really
we're
true.
Inherently the worst spellers in the world, I have to tell you.
Well, you've got a good spell checker because your novel, I just finished it, and I just loved it, Carlene.
Oh,
it
awesome.
Great. I've got to
go
on Amazon.
Okay, everybody, read Flight for Sanity, and then go leave a comment if you could. That would be wonderful.
Oh, I am. I am. So,
thank you.
My name
excellent.
There. Yeah. Great, great. Now I want to order another one, and so I want to go through your entire series there. So,
oh, thank
good,
you.
Yeah, who, you got a spell checker. So,
but, you know, it's just really tough. It's really tough to write a novel that is so long because you know it. You get so into it, and you read it over and over, and it's really your eyes miss things. And actually, there's a phenomenon that if you have the same letter, you know, five letters, and and you just move them around, but it's actually the spelling of the word, but it's jumbled, your eye won't pick it up. Your eye reads what it thinks it wants to see, so it is really challenging.
Well, Carlene, do you think there might be a chance that Darby's going to get a divorce?
Hey, she's not even, Darby's not even married.
That's
yet,
right, she's
okay,
not
guys?
Married.
Darby is still single.
Darby.
Yeah, we just don't,
Darby.
Know,
oh,
yeah, we
a,
just don't know what's going to happen with her.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
It was a good book, and
thanks.
George said it right. He said, you know, it's a fictional novel, but you've got so much facts stuff that we in the airline business, especially pilots and maintenance, we can identify with so much material in your book.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of things in there, too, that people might think are fiction that really aren't. So one day when I finish the PhD, we might hear we might be able to read the nonfiction book that came out of the series. We'll have to have a little contest to see who can figure out which part is fiction and which part is real.
Now, you're going to have to send me an email with your address so I can send you this gift that you won tonight. So,
okay, I'll do
yeah,
that.
You'll like it. You'll like it. I guarantee.
Awesome.
I think it. I think she actually has it at the bottom of your email, don't you, Dick Colin?
Is it there?
No, I don't think my address is on there.
I want a mailing address or P.O. box or however you
okay.
get your mail, and I'll send it
okay.
out to you. I think you'll like it. So,
okay.
Well, folks. What a great show we had tonight, and I want to thank all of our hosts and guests with us tonight. Carlene, thanks for stopping by, and you probably just came in from Amsterdam or somewhere.
No, actually, I came in from the Seattle Pacific Science Center. I went on a field trip with my 5-year-old granddaughter.
Oh,
so, yes, that was quite the experience. I thought the old 727 was the noisiest place on Earth. I was wrong. A bus filled with 5-year-olds is the noisiest place on Earth.
Okay, very good. Well, here's Lawrence. Chuck?
Well, folks, it's that time again. Man, that's all we have for tonight. Captain Neil, how about putting flight 309 gently back on the runway?
Okay, Nashville Tower, this is Eastern 309er. We're about 15 miles out. We're lined up for a straight in for runway 16. If that's okay, we've got the runway in sight.
Eastern flight 309, this is Nashville Tower. You're clear to land on runway 16. The winds are light and variable, 150 degrees at 10 miles an hour, and the present temperature at the airport is 72 degrees. It's a beautiful addition to the great silver fleet of Eastern.
Roger, and thanks, National Tower, Eastern 309, clear to land, runway 16. Here we come. We just landed the airplane.
Okay, great landing, Captain. We had a great informative night. Mr. Producer, another outstanding job on the board. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines or the new Eastern Air finds in the place we work and the stories we share. We feel we've truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of our callers, the listeners, guests, hosts, and sponsor, REPA, the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. Good night. Until next week, Eastern family. We love you, Eastern.
We love you, Eastern.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Good night.